resistance is bound by their love for Palestine.
Saeed Hassan Nasrallah.
Saeed Hassan Nasrallah
was not only a great leader.
Was not only a great leader.
Phenomenal human being.
Phenomenal human being.
Military general.
Military general.
And martyr.
And martyr.
But also an enigma.
But also an enigma.
Whose humility.
Whose humility.
Altruism.
Altruism.
And truth.
And truth.
Have become the guiding light.
Have become the guiding light.
Of the resistance in.
Of the resistance in.
Lebanon.
Lebanon.
Yemen.
Yemen.
Iran.
Iran.
Iraq.
Iraq.
Palestine.
Palestine.
And beyond.
And beyond.
Sayyid Nasrallah and Sayyid Safiyuddin gave Palestine their all. From the beginning of their struggle in liberating the occupied lands until the day of their martyrdom, Israel thought that by burying the body of Sayyid Nasrallah under 83 tons of explosives that it ended the resistance. But what it did not know was that it actually buried the seeds of resistance that will keep growing. Rachel Hamdouin, New York.
Now to Gaza, where Hamas warns that it will not enter new negotiations unless Israel completely adheres to the ceasefire agreement and releases the seventh batch of Palestinian prisoners. Abdul Latif Al-Bonu, a spokesman for Hamas, said that Israel's failure to implement the first phase of the ceasefire is blocking the release of the remaining Israeli captives. He noted that the failure to implement the humanitarian protocol and the delays in releasing Palestinian prisoners indicate Israel's intention to disrupt the agreement. He said that Hamas is in contact with the mediators about these violations. Now, the comments came after Israel failed to release 620 Palestinian prisoners as scheduled. Hamas had previously released the six Israeli captives in accordance with the agreement. Israel has also blocked the temporary shelters and heavy machinery from entering Gaza and continues its military operations, resulting in civilian casualties. Over the past day, 10 more Palestinian bodies were recovered, raising the total death toll from the U.S.-Israeli genocide to nearly 48,350 people. Meanwhile, our Gaza correspondent Moti Abu Musabe joined us earlier with the latest details on Israel's ceasefire violations across the besieged territory. Let's take a listen.
Over the past couple of hours, several Israeli tanks and bulldozers burst ahead towards Al-Fukhari area in the eastern part of Khan Yunis, Syria, amid heavy gunfire towards the Palestinian people who returned to their destroyed residential areas there. And as you know, this is not the first time for the Israeli occupation forces to target the Palestinian people there. Even when it comes to Rafah City, the Israeli tanks mobilized at Philadelphia Corridor in the southern part of Rafah City continued to shoot at the Palestinian people there, particularly in the people who are still attempting to return to the central area of Rafah City, particularly in the vicinity of the Al-Auda roundabout. Several Palestinian civilians were confirmed and reported injured by the Israeli forces as a result of the indiscriminate gunfire targeting the Palestinian people. As you know, since the very beginning of the implementation ceasefire agreement on the ground here, the Israeli violations have never stopped for a while, particularly in Rafah City. According to the mayor of Rafah City, more than 33 Palestinian civilians were killed since the onset of the ceasefire agreement in Rafah City. We are talking about thousands of the Palestinian people who are still unable to move or reach their residential areas, albeit they are completely destroyed by the Israeli occupation forces. Though these are considered like, as you know, flagrant violations of the ceasefire agreement on the ground, needless to mention that the Israeli occupation forces are also in different parts of Gaza continue to shoot at the Palestinian people. A short while ago, here in Gaza City, the Israeli tanks opened the gunfire towards the Palestinian people in the eastern part of Az-Zaytun neighborhood.
The Israeli occupation forces continue their incursions into the northern occupied West Bank as Palestinian groups put up the stiff resistance to the invading regime forces. The armed wing of the Palestinian Islamic Jihad has said that its fighters clashed with Israeli troops in Jenin that resulted in the injuries of regime troops. Israel has deployed tanks and other heavy military vehicles in northern West Bank. Now, regime forces also raided homes in some areas and abducted several Palestinians. According to media reports, Israel is intending to create large corridors in Torkaram and Jenin in order to allow free movement for its forces and heavy equipment. It has been several weeks since Tel Aviv launched a large-scale military operation dubbed Iron Wall. Israeli forces have killed dozens of Palestinians and destroyed large swaths of land in the north. Naga Hamid has earlier joined us from Ramallah and given us more details on the latest Israeli aggression in occupied West Bank.
This is the first time that the Palestinian engineering since 2002, which marked the end of the large Israeli aggression upon the West Bank, which was called the Protecting Wall. And since it has finished in 2002, Palestinians over here have not seen military tanks in the West Bank. But yesterday, the military tanks have indeed came into Jenin, and they have settled in the area and the surrounding of the Jenin refugee camp. Immediately, the IRF started intensifying their raids, destroying even more infrastructure that is already severely destroyed, destroying entire roads in the area of Qabatia, as Qabatia has been under a full ban of movement since late Friday. We are talking about almost 3 days under a movement ban. And according to local resources, we are waiting that this ban will end in the hours of the noon, but no official statement about this. But the destruction in Qabatia was actually unimaginable.
The United Nations chief says he is gravely concerned about the rising violence by Israeli settlers against Palestinians in the occupied West Bank. Antonio Guterres also slammed calls for annexation of Palestinian territory, including the Gaza Strip, as Israel expands its military operations in the West Bank. Guterres told the UN Human Rights Council in Geneva that a precarious ceasefire is holding in Gaza and the resumption of hostilities must be avoided at all costs. He also called for the establishment of an independent Palestinian state with Gaza as an integral part. Meanwhile, a fresh pro-Palestine protest has taken place in the Spanish capital. Protesters gathered to demand an end to the Israeli atrocities, calling for justice for the Palestinian people. They also condemned the West for its silence and inaction on Israeli crimes. Alberto Garcia brings us more from Madrid.
The BDS movement in Spain, along with the Solidarity Network Against the Occupation of Palestine, has called for a large demonstration in Madrid under the slogan, Stop the Genocide in Palestine, Palestine is not for sale. The protest condemns Israel's impunity in committing genocide, ethnic cleansing, and territorial expansion, while criticizing the West's hypocritical silence and inaction which enabled these crimes. The demonstration began in front of the U.S. Embassy, a symbolic center of imperialist support for Israel's settler colonial project. Protesters staged a loud pot-banging protest, voicing their opposition to Washington's unwavering military, financial, and political backing of the Zionist regime.
Supporting these mobilizations is a moral imperative. Standing with Palestinians after decades of oppression is urgent. Meanwhile, our authorities secretly sustain the arms trade with a regime accused of genocide, making them complicit in these crimes. Silence is not neutrality, it's complicity.
The Palestinian cause is a fight for humanity. Those who don't defend it are misled by distorted media. For nearly 80 years, Israel has falsely claimed victimhood while committing some of the worst crimes since the World War II.
The march moved to the European Commission in Madrid, where activists condemned the EU's hypocrisy, claiming to defend human rights while funding and arming Israel's occupation. The mobilization denounces Israel's ethnic cleansing in Gaza and demands an end to arms trade, military cooperation, and ties with the Zionist entity. With the call to stop the genocide in Palestine and arms trade and ties with Israel, people in Madrid once again take to the streets to demand an immediate halt to military and diplomatic cooperation with Israel, exposing the complicity of Western powers in the ongoing ethnic cleansing of the Palestinian people. Alberto Garcia, Madrid.
Iranian Foreign Minister Abbas Araghchi calls for accountability from those who possess nuclear weapons, including the U.S. and Israel. Araghchi issued the call at a United Nations disarmament conference in the Swiss city of Geneva. He added that the use or even the threat of using nuclear weapons must remain taboo. Araghchi criticized the lack of any inspection over Washington's nuclear activities. He condemned Israel's arsenal of weapons of mass destruction, labeling them a significant threat to both regional and global peace. Now, the top Iranian diplomat noted that Israel has repeatedly threatened different countries over the past decades and have attacked a number of nations. Also in Geneva, the Iranian foreign minister has met with the UN Secretary General and a number of officials from other countries on the sidelines of the disarmament conference. In a meeting between Abbas Araghchi and Antonio Guterres, the two sides emphasized closer cooperation among the different countries in the face of threats against peace and stability. In a separate meeting with his Bahraini counterpart, Abdul Latif bin Rashid Al Zayani, Araghchi urged Manama and all Arab and Islamic states to firmly stand against the forced displacement of the Palestinians from Gaza. The top Iranian diplomat also discussed a range of issues with the Armenian foreign minister, Ararat Mirzoyan. The issues included regional cooperation in order to safeguard the stability and sovereignty of regional countries. The Iranian foreign minister also met with his Indonesian counterpart, Sugiono. Now, the European Union has announced a broad range of new sanctions against Russia on the third anniversary of the Ukraine conflict, even as differences grow between the U.S. and EU on Kiev.
We are discussing and hopefully can pass the 16th package of sanctions, which includes gaming consoles to Shadow Fleet, the different aspects. And then we have also put forward a new defense initiative to support Ukraine with ammunition capabilities in the short term, what they need.
The top EU diplomat added that the new round of sanctions is aimed at curbing Russia's war efforts. Russian banks, media outlets, and oil sector are among the targets of these restrictions. She also rejected the recent statements by U.S. President Donald Trump, who called the Ukrainian president a dictator. Kanja insisted that the U.S. cannot seal any peace deal with the Russian president, Vladimir Putin, without Ukraine or Europe being involved. The differences between the U.S. and the EU's stance on Ukraine has grown wider in recent months following a high delegation meeting between U.S. and Russia on mending ties and ending the war in Ukraine. Neither the EU nor Ukraine were invited to the talks. And with that brings us to the end of this Worldness edition right here. Thanks so much for staying tuned.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
Limelight. Donald Trump's sudden shift on Ukraine has shaken the transatlantic alliance to its core, and many European leaders are now saying Europe can no longer rely on U.S. security assurances. We take a look at the world media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Agence France-Presse has covered this story and tells us more. Donald Trump's southern shift on Ukraine has shaken the transatlantic alliance to its core. Now European leaders are crossing that same ocean in a desperate bid to shore it up. French President Emmanuel Macron and Britain's Prime Minister Keir Starmer will meet Donald Trump separately at the White House this week to try to convince him to stick by Kiev. But fears are growing in European capitals that the bond forged from the ruins of the Second World War is on the verge of collapse as Donald Trump pursues talks with Russian President Vladimir Putin. In Trump, many see a president who has abandoned the traditional U.S. view of a rules-based world order in favor of a nationalist great power game with Moscow and Beijing. That has caused panic on the European continent that has relied on U.S. security assurance for the past 80 years. The Europeans are running around with their hair on fire, according to Max Bergman, director of the Europe, Russia and Eurasia program at the Washington-based Center for Strategic and International Studies. For his part, Donald Trump insists that he's just seeking peace in Ukraine. Trump told reporters in the Oval Office on Friday, "I think that President Putin and President Zelensky are going to have to get together, because you know what? We want to stop killing of millions of people." But Donald Trump's embrace of Kremlin's talking points on Ukraine, calling President Volodymyr Zelensky a dictator without elections and blaming Ukraine for the war, has caused alarm in Europe. It has also reinforced suspicions that Donald Trump is effectively pulling the plug on decades of U.S. support for Europe. In Trump's view, European officials fear the United States, Russia, and China will instead look after their own spheres of influence closer to home. Trump, referring to the war in Ukraine, said, "You know, it doesn't affect the United States very much. It's on the other side of the ocean." Even in his first term in office, he threatened to pull out of NATO military alliance and questioned why the United States spends huge amounts of money on keeping troops in Europe. Trump's meeting with Emmanuel Macron on Monday and Keir Starmer on Thursday could therefore be testy. President Macron said he would tell Donald Trump not to be weak on Ukraine. Britain and France have both offered to send peacekeepers in the event of a deal to end the war, but Keir Starmer has pushed for a U.S. backstop. Trump, for his part, accused both leaders of doing nothing to end the Ukraine war over the past 3 years. Many Europeans are also realizing that the writing could indeed be on the wall. Polish Prime Minister Mateusz Morawiecki told Agence France-Presse at the Conservative Political Action Conference in Washington, he said, "We experience now quite a difficult and very dangerous moment when both parts of the transatlantic community, so to say, are getting more and more away from each other." For Nigel Gould-Davies, senior fellow for Russia and Eurasia at the London-based International Institute for Strategic Studies, it was an unprecedented transatlantic crisis. Nigel Gould-Davies said, "By negotiating with Russia over European heads and intervening in European politics, the United States is not only decoupling from, but deciding for and disrupting Europe. The question now is whether Europe, after years of talking about how they need to take more responsibility for their security umbrella in case of a rainy day, will do so now that the day has come." Denmark's foreign minister, Lars Løkke Rasmussen, told Agence France-Presse that Europe has to do more in order to defend ourselves, but also in order to support Ukraine, because we're in a very, very critical period in world history. The European Union's top diplomat, Kaja Kallas, on Tuesday separately urged the United States not to walk into traps set by Russia. But for the analyst, Max Bergman, it could also be a wake-up call for Europe. Max Bergman said, "I think what is being asked of Europe now is not just to simply do a bit more, but is for Europe to effectively take action that would make it emerge, frankly, as a superpower. Euronews has also covered the same story and tells us more. Donald Trump's push to strike a deal between Russia and Ukraine has rattled Europeans and stoked fears that their security will be irreparably weakened. Donald Trump wants to strike a deal to end the Russia-Ukraine war. What could possibly go wrong? For Europe, just about everything, it seems. More than a week after the American president held an out-of-the-blue call with his Russian counterpart Vladimir Putin and announced the immediate start of negotiations, European allies are still trying to find their footing in the chain of events, which is moving with vertiginous speed. The fact the phone call was uncoordinated with the other side of the Atlantic Ocean and caught everybody by surprise set the stage for what followed. A flurry of reactive statements, bitter recriminations, and last-minute meetings to close ranks and reclaim Europe's place in the haphazard diplomatic process. Kaja Kallas, the European Union's High Representative for Foreign Policy, said, "If there is an agreement made behind our backs, it will simply not work. You need the Europeans to implement this deal." The White House, however, was unfazed. Donald Trump then sent a delegation to Saudi Arabia for the first high-level talks with Russian officials in over 3 years. The two sides agreed to normalize bilateral relations and appoint dedicated teams to advance negotiations on the future of Ukraine, which was not invited to the meeting. The European Union's foreign policy chief, Kaja Kallas, reacted with a warning. "Russia will try to divide us. Let's not walk into their trap." Her words encapsulated the foreboding feeling spreading across the European continent, which fears its long-term security now hinges on the designs of one single man. Europe was well aware of Donald Trump's admiration for Vladimir Putin. The Republican once called the Russian president a great genius. Now back in the White House, Donald Trump has doubled and tripled down on his flattering rhetoric, to the point of replicating the Kremlin's talking points. After Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky complained about his country being excluded from the meeting in Saudi Arabia, Donald Trump lashed out by blaming the war on Ukraine. Trump said, "You've been there for 3 years. You should have ended it 3 years ago. You should have never started it." Zelensky replied that Trump unfortunately lives in a disinformation space, which Trump followed by calling Zelensky a dictator without elections, prompting international outrage. The charge words cast serious doubts over Trump's ability or willingness to be an impartial, firm moderator between the two parties. Russia comes to the negotiating table with a stronger negotiating hand, as it has a larger army, a larger economy, and larger territory than Ukraine. Ukraine is staring down at a decades-long reconstruction effort of colossal price. If Donald Trump from the get-go takes Russia's side, the balance will be irreversibly tilted against Volodymyr Zelensky. This will allow Vladimir Putin to secure most, if not all, of the Ukrainian territory that Russian military forces have occupied, estimated to be about 20% of Ukraine's land.
First methodology that the Quran uses is to talk to the emotional side of the human being.
يا أيها الذين آمنوا, O you who believe, استعينوا بالصبر والصلاة.
And we have set forth for mankind in this Quran full of examples.
منبر
a lecture on Islamic issues.
Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, this is the member you are listening to. Today we invite you to listen to an English lecture by Brother Amin Rastani.
We've all been there and done that, that our child, our youth, our Sunday school kid comes up to us, maybe when they're 6 years old-ish. What do they tell you or ask you? They say, how come I cannot see Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala? I want to see Allah. Now the problem, you know, is this, that we have an answer to that. But when the kids are a little too young to understand the deeper answers, we kind of get stuck. That's the hard part. And they think you don't have an answer. Now God forbid you're a Mawlana too. They look at you, they say, aren't you Mawlana? And so you say, yeah. They say, well, you should know everything. You should know the answer to everything. Yeah? It happens all the time. All right, so we know what's going on. Now we'll tell our kids that, we'll give them an answer. Our Sunday school kids, our own kids, we'll give them an answer. But deep down inside, we're smiling and we're thinking to ourselves that we know what the problem is. Because as a child, Allah has put us in this world, right? And we have grown accustomed to the five senses that we have. The way we register knowledge and information is through these five senses and the experiences we have through them. So we want everything to go by these five senses. That which can be sensed by the five senses exists. That which cannot be sensed doesn't exist. That is our mentality growing up. We are put in this world of cause and effect. And so the cause of my success will be money, will be relationships, will be my work, and so on. Will be my own knowledge, my own smarts. Like Qarun said, إِنَّمَا أُوتِيتُهُ عَلَىٰ عِلْمٍ عِنْدِي. Qarun, in the time of Musa, he got in big trouble because he had a lot of wealth. But he kept telling the people, he told the people that, yes, I was given this and I was able to achieve this because of a knowledge that I have. Taking Allah out of the equation. When we're put in this world, brothers and sisters, we're put into this world, Allah has something in mind when He puts us here. He puts us into this world, we grow accustomed to the cause and effect, which is there. It is a reality. But the purpose of all of this seems to be that Allah wants us to grow slowly out of this understanding. That's why He's given us a lifetime for this. I'm not going to expect this from a 10-year-old, from a 15-year-old, from a 20-year-old, from a 30-year-old even. But slowly when you get a little older, like myself, and you're looking and you can see the end coming closer and closer, it's time to start waking up to the reality that Allah is also part of the equation. Cause and effect is there. The five senses are there. What I register through these five senses is true. But there's more to it than that. Yes. And so we're given this lifetime so that we can grow out of this. Now some people, they reach 40, 50, 60, they're still like that child that was asking that question in the beginning of the lecture. For example, the Bani Israel, they were all adults, yet they were struggling with this problem that they were still looking at these things very superficially and in a childish way. I want to share three verses of the Quran that illustrate this. What are we talking about again? Talking about that kid who comes up to me and says, I want to see God. How come I can't see God? And I want to segue, use that as a segue to into our topic tonight, which has to do with Imam Zaman alayhi salam. So, these three verses, one of them is Surah Al-A'raf, verse 138. وَجَاوَزْنَا بِبَنِي إِسْرَائِيلَ الْبَحْرِ. The biggest miracle. Like one of the biggest miracles. We crossed the Bani Israel, across the Red Sea. And so, after seeing this miracle, I mean, you would expect that they remember that for a while. Apparently, they forgot, or they're a little too childish deep down inside. So, what did they say? Right when they cross, they come to the other side. The grass is greener on the other side. Pun is kind of intended there. So, they come on the other side. They see that there are people there. There are people there who are worshipping idols. What did they say? فَأَتَوْ عَلَىٰ قَوْمٍ يَعْكُفُونَ عَلَىٰ أَصْنَامٍ لَهُمْ قَالُوا يَا مُوسَىٰ أَوْ مُوسَىٰ مُوسَىٰ مُوسَىٰ. You know, I'm reading it in a childish tone, but these are adults we're talking about. who just put behind them one of the biggest miracles of Allah. O Musa, O Musa, اجعل لنا إلهًا كما لهم آلهة. Face palm. Give us a Lord the way they have a Lord. Prophet Musa is saying, like, probably thinking to himself, like, we just split the gosh darn sea, and now you're asking for a God that you, that just like they have a God. Don't you think a God did that for you? That's why I read it in a childish tone. That's one. They want to see Allah, just like these people are seeing their God and worshiping it, which is an idol. Or another verse, they say that when Prophet Musa went to meet his Lord, he took with him some people. Those people had a demand. And so Prophet Musa, on their behalf, had to ask Allah and request Allah this request. What is the request? Rabbi arini anzur ilayk. Oh Allah, show yourself to me so I can see you with this physical eye. And right away Allah says, lan tarani, you'll never see me. Walakin unzur ilal jabal. You're really interested in seeing me? Trust me, it's not good for you. Keep this in mind. It's not good for you. Maybe it's better if you don't see me. Why? Unzur ilal jabal. Look at the mountain. فَإِنْ اسْتَقَرَّ مَكَانَهُ فَسَوْفَ تَرَانِي. If it stays in its place, then you'll see me. In other words, you can't. This is rhetorical here. What he's telling him, Allah is telling him, is rhetorical, meaning you're not going to be able to look. The mountain will not be able to handle this greatness of me, let alone you and your physical eye. فَلَمَّا تَجَلَّ رَبُّهُ لِلْجَبَلِي جَعَلَهُ دَكَّن. We all know the story, right? Allah manifested upon the mountain. The mountain was destroyed. فَخَرَّ مُوسَى صَعِقًا. Musa passes out, and we know till the end what happened. All right. Rabbi arini anzur ilayk. I want to look at you. No, maybe it's not possible. Maybe there's something in it for you to not be able to see me. Lan tarani. Allah brought us here so we grow and put behind us this childish understanding of I want to see God. Another verse. Oh, that was Surah Araf 143, the second verse. The third one, Surah Nisa 153. يَسْأَلُكَ أَهْلُ الْكِتَابِ أَن تُنَزِّلَ عَلَيْهِمْ كِتَابًا مِنَ السَّمَاءِ. The Ahlul Kitab of your time, O Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, they're asking you to send down a book, to bring a book for them, upon them, reveal it unto them. Like the Qur'an is not enough, they're asking for a book for themselves. Don't worry, Prophet. Did you know their ancestors asked for something greater than that? What did they ask for? فَقَدْ سَأَلُوا مُوسَى أَكْبَر مِنْ ذَلِكَ. They asked Musa something greater. Akbar. What was it? فَقَالُوا أَرِنَا اللَّهَ جَهْرَةً. Show us Allah in the open. Okay, so you can still be a child when you're 50, 60 years old. The point is, brothers and sisters, for us to come here to slowly understand and reach a point that through our obedience to Allah, through our servitude to Allah, reach a point, inshallah, through reciting Quran all the time, reflecting, reminding, I don't need to see Him for Him to exist. Yeah, trust me, if a person sees Allah with the eye of the heart, it'll be worth more than seeing Him with the physical eye. Yeah, and that's why they say, and this is where the connection between this whole matter of Allah and the Imams or the Prophet comes into the picture. How many people saw the Prophet in his lifetime but went against him and questioned him on the most basic things for God's sake? They sit in the presence of the Prophet, stretching their legs out, or, you know, laying on their stomachs and bellies and saying, Ya Rasulullah, qussana, tell us stories. Like, don't you know in whose presence you're in? Ayatullah Bahjat, in Salat, every time he would reach the parts of Salat that the Prophet's name is mentioned, he would weep. Like, he understands a little bit maybe the greatness of this individual. These people are seeing the Prophet. It's not about the physical aspect of things. Allah wants us to grow out of all of this. And so, what we'll tell that child, if we can tell them anything, is the same way when Allah is everywhere, that's why you cannot see Him, and so we see Him with the heart, just like Ali ibn Abi Talib taught us when that individual asked him, do you see your Lord when you worship Him? And Imam Ali gave the famous answer that we all know. He said, woe unto you, the eyes of the face don't see Him. لَا تُدْرِكُهُ الْعُيُونَ فِي مُشَاهِدَةِ الْأَبْصَارِ. We can't see Him with the eyes that see things, but rather, رَأَتْهُ الْقُلُوبَ. The hearts see Him. See Allah with, but how do they see Him? What do they see of Him? بِحَقَائِقِ الْإِيمَانِ. With the faith that you have. In other words, there is another sense in addition to the five senses. What is the sixth sense? It is the sense of Iman.
You're listening to Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This program entitled Minbar. Our email address is englishradio@irib.ir.
Rahi Karim Azim Alim Halim Hakim Mateen.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
It guides us through life. It has taught us everything. We should learn and appreciate what it gives us. And try to apply them to our daily lives. How is it possible? By means of Quran.
این خوندن قرآن و تلاوت قرآن قدم اول است برادران من این قدم آخر نیست.
Reading and recitation of the Quran is the first step, brothers, not the last one.
هو الذي ارسل رسوله بالهدى ودين.
It is he who has sent his apostle with the guidance and the religion of truth, that he may make it prevail over all religions, though the polytheists should be averse.
تلاوت قرآن با صوت خوش با آداب که شیوه خاصی دارد موسیقی خاصی دارد روش خاصی دارد.
Recitation of the Quran in nice tones should be performed according to particular methods and tones. But it's not enough.
مشکل بزرگ مسلمانان دنیا دوری از قرآن. دوری از قرآن.
Muslims' major problem is losing touch with the Quran. Quran, Quran.
In the limelight.
Achieving even a semblance of normality is an enormous task after the Zionist regime's genocidal war on Gaza. The sense of determination shown by the Palestinian people on their journey home indicates that they have already begun that task. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Please stay tuned for more.
Thank you.
The Electronic Intifada wrote, Ahmad Rezvan was pushing the wheelchair used by his 88-year-old grandfather, Sadi, while carrying a bag with some clothes and a few other belongings. They were heading back to Jabalia refugee camp, northern Gaza, after more than a year of forced displacement. Ahmad, 27, looked exhausted. They had set out from the Nusayrat area of central Gaza early in the morning. Ahmad would have to walk a distance of about 15 kilometers before reaching their destination. Ahmad told the Electronic Intifada, the route is difficult and rough. The streets along the way were destroyed, and there were a lot of debris and deep craters caused by the airstrikes. Despite the conditions, we were determined to continue our journey and reach our home, he added. Before the displacement, Ahmad and his family had lived in a five-story building. With Israel laying waste to Jabalia, that building was damaged severely, he said. I'm happy because we can restore two rooms to live in. That's much better than living in a tent, he added. The situation is extremely tough. The scale of destruction is unimaginable. There are no services, no water, no electricity, no sewage systems. But the fact is that we are returning to the north, and it means a lot to us. We will rebuild our lives from scratch. Once the ceasefire came into effect on January 19th, Sadi, Ahmad's grandfather, insisted that the family return to Jabalia promptly. Delaying the journey could prolong their displacement, Sadi argued, as he feared that the ceasefire would not hold. As a child, Sadi had been uprooted from his original home during the Nakba, the ethnic cleansing of Palestine between 1947 and 1949. As he was never allowed to return there, he was adamant that his 21st century displacement must end. The Zionist regime only permitted displaced people to head back towards northern Gaza more than a week after the ceasefire went into effect. Hundreds of thousands have headed back to their homes in Gaza since then. Abu Qusay, a 38-year-old nurse, was among them. He said, I will never leave my home again, no matter what happens. I would rather stay and die in it than be displaced again, no matter the danger. He said, despite the extensive destruction in Gaza, the feeling of returning and reuniting with loved ones is indescribable. Many undertook the journey even though their homes in the northern part of Gaza had been destroyed. Muhammad Adali, 38, walked with his mother, his wife, and four of their daughters. He said, there is no home to return to. I don't know what to do in the midst of all this destruction. All we want, all that has occupied our thoughts, is to return to the north. While everyone in Gaza has gone through horrors over the past 15 months, the experience of Aye Hassuna was particularly traumatic. Having fled northern Gaza for the south, the tent in which her family sought shelter was attacked by the Zionist regime. Aye's journalist husband, Abdullah Al-Susi, and their children, Hamza and Ragat, aged 4 and 2 respectively, were killed in an Israeli regime attack in August. Aye went back to the north on her own. She said, I feel a deep sorrow going back alone without my husband and children. She was hoping that reuniting with her parents would relieve a small amount of her pain. Gaza is in ruins. More than 50 million tons of rubble have to be removed. Doing so could take 2 decades, according to a United Nations estimate. As well as all the damage that will have to be repaired, Gaza's people have to try and cope in a situation involving an incalculable level of grief and shock. Achieving even a semblance of normality is an enormous task after a genocidal war. The sense of determination shown by people on their journey home indicates that they have already begun that task.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1930 to 2030 UTC on the following frequencies. Shortwave 25 meters, 11,880 kHz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAD 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is iranradio.ir. And now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Send your correspondence to the English program, P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود غده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancer's tumor, Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
The following is part of the speech delivered by Imam Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, in a meeting with the commanders of the Iran's Air Force and Air Defense Force. The meeting took place on February 7th, 2025, in the Imam Khomeini Husseiniyah on the anniversary of the historic Air Force commander's pledge of allegiance to Imam Khomeini in 1979. Negotiations with the United States have no effect on solving the country's problems. Of course, there are problems inside the country. No one denies that problems exist. There are many problems in people's livelihoods. Almost all segments of society face hardships and challenges. However, that which solves these problems is an internal factor. The internal factor is the determination of committed Iranian officials and the cooperation of a united Iranian nation. This is exactly what you will witness in the upcoming rally, God willing, the unity of the people. Every year, the rally on 22nd of Bahman is a demonstration of national unity in our country. A perceptive nation and indefatigable officials are what will solve our problems. The officials are busy working. Praise God, they are getting things done. And I am very hopeful that this esteemed administration will at least be able to ease people's difficulties in their livelihood and remove their hardships. The U.S. is sitting and redrawing the map of the world on paper, but it's only on paper and has no relation to reality whatsoever. They make comments about us, talk, give opinions, and issue threats. If they threaten us, we will threaten them. If they carry out their threat, we will carry out our threat. If they disrupt the security of our nation, we will definitely disrupt their security as well. This approach is taken from the Quran, is the command of Islam, and is our duty. We hope Almighty God grants us success in carrying out our duties.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
April 26th, 2022. I used to go to the University of Tehran every week, without any exception. This dates back to 40 years ago, not now. There, students would gather and pose their questions, and I would provide answers. Thus, many problems would be resolved, and many feelings would be expressed. In certain cases, there were no answers for the criticisms made, and we understood that there was a need for something to be done. Such problems must be resolved. I have advised officials in various organizations and ministers to come and hold discussions with you. Well, the General Staff of the Armed Forces and the Islamic Revolution Guards Corps were mentioned here. These organizations must step forward and speak. Many of these criticisms can be explained. Of course, in certain cases, there may not be good explanations, and the other side will understand the need for taking action in that regard. This is a point that I wanted to raise so that you will take it into consideration.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
supplication on Tuesdays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah, and praise is His right, since Him deserves it, abundant praise. I seek refuge in Him from the evil of my soul, for surely the soul commands to evil except as my Lord has mercy. I seek refuge in Him from the evil of Satan, who adds sins to my sin. I seek protection with Him from every wicked tyrant and unjust sovereign and conquering enemy. O Allah, place me among Thy troops are the victors, and place me in Thy party, for Thy party are the ones who prosper. And place me among Thy friends, for Thy friends no fear shall be upon them, nor shall they sorrow. O Allah, set right for me my religion, for it is the preserving tie of my affair. Set right for me my hereafter, for it is the abode of my permanent lodging, and to it I flee from the neighborhood of the vile. Make life an increase for me in every good, and death an ease for me from every evil. O Allah, bless Muhammad, the seal of the prophets, and the completion of the number of the envoys, and his household, the good, the pure, and his household, the good, the pure, and his companions, the distinguished. And give me on the Tuesday three things. Leave no sin for me unless Thou forgives it, and leave no grief unless Thou takes it away, and leave no enemy, and leave no enemy unless Thou repelst him. By means of in the name of Allah, the best of the names, in the name of Allah, Lord of earth and heaven, I seek to repulse every hateful thing, the first of which is his anger. And I seek to attract every lovable thing, the first of which is his good pleasure. So seal me with forgiveness from thee, O patron of beneficence.
Today's special.
Assalamu alaikum.
It's special for you. We present to you today.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحیم.